Hello and welcome to Chats, a television podcast, Season 13, Part 5, Chats of Prey. This is the fifth series in our season on shows misfortunate enough to be canceled before airing their 13th episode, which we've been calling 13 Under 13. My name is Magellan, and in our line of work, a lot of folks interview Judas, including Alan. It's Alan. Hey, Alan, what's up?
That was one of the weirdest lines in the episode. Because yeah. I was like, is that a thing people say? A lot of people break Judas. What does he break Judas? Do a Judas?
Turn Judas.
Turn Judas?
Phil. Yeah. Like remember, betray.
I fully understand what it means. But just the phrasing of it is like, has anyone ever said that before this character right now? Unlikely.
Probably Jesus.
He's like, turn your cheek so I can give thee a kiss as did Judas. And then Judas is like, wait, hold on. I don't get it.
Wait, hold
on. I'm Judas. But doctor, I'm Judas. Pretty funny. Pretty funny. Anyways, this is Birds of Prey.
I will always laugh at a Pagliacci joke. That's for sure.
But doctor, I'm the doctor.
You didn't think you were going to do a good one, but you did a good one.
I brought it home, baby. I brought it home. This is Chats of Prey, part of 1313, as Magellan mentioned. We watch canceled shows. We talk about them. Magellan, I got a new desk chair, and while it is much more comfortable than my previous one, it has one fatal flaw that may be good or may be bad for the podcast going forward.
No back.
Even better.
Too tall.
Even worse.
Squeaky.
Oh my god.
Spins.
It does spin. It does. It do spins. No, it the back is leaned back by default. I can't lean it forward.
Ah, so you can't get close to the hot mic.
I can bring the mic to me, and now I'm like 60% reclined, which is, I mean, I'm so comfortable, but I feel myself talking slower. It's kind of remarkable.
60% is drastic. I would feel like I'm falling out of that chair.
No, it's not 60%. It's
like 30% recline.
Maybe a 45-degree angle. Maybe a 45-degree angle.
Whoa. It's a little, no, thank you.
It's a little more reclined than it should be. I was reading an Amazon review that was like, yeah, I just don't use the back as a result when I'm working. And it's like, oh, fatal flaw. That's half of the chair.
Are there no arms on it or something?
There are. They actually, you can remove them. You can like push them up so that you don't have to touch them.
Huh.
It's comfy. I'll tell you that. My old one was just not. My old one is the one you have, which, you know, got the job done, but it's just not very like luxurious.
Whereas, no, it hurts the butt.
Yeah, there's no butt hurt here. But there may be in our discussion of Birds of Prey this week, pal.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. So we watched two episodes of Birds of Prey, the 2002-2003 little series here, set in the New Gotham, City of New Gotham. It's been a while since we've watched Birds of Prey, the two of us, because last week you heard our Trek Chats episode. We did that. And we, before recording that Trek Chats episode, took a week off. So it's been 2 weeks since we've recorded and talked about Birds of Prey, makes it kind of weird to come back. But we are back talking about episode 9 and episode 10, Nature of the Beast and Gladiatrix. First, Nature of the Beast, written by Melissa Rosenberg, directed by Sean Levy. It aired on December 18th, 2002. Alan, tell me what happened in the episode and tell me what it felt like to come back to Birds of Prey after being away from it for a little while.
So in this episode, Helena has to help the man who killed Dinah's mother. To flesh that out a little bit, we're talking about Mr. Al Hawk, the father of Reese Hawk, who has been made a completely new face thanks to the magic of facial reconstruction surgery and recasting actors. And he is dealing with another major criminal called the Wall Crawler, I believe. Something like that. He's a guy that can pass through walls. And the Wall Walker, there it is. Wall Crawler's Marvel.
Yeah, right.
And in trying to catch the Wall Walker, they decide to work with him. He seems to have turned a new leaf, but ultimately, even though they catch the Wall Walker by trapping him in a lead room, they are not able to, or rather, Hawk does not reconcile with his son. And they go their separate ways. Sad. How did I feel coming back to Birds of Prey? It's weird, man. Like, I think you know, we used to take such longer breaks and like weird breaks in the middle of seasons. And I think podcasting in general, but especially chats, works when you have momentum really well. Mm-hmm. And so it was honestly like difficult at first to go like, what do I talk about? What do I take notes on? How do I do this? Like how quickly those skills atrophy. And like for Trek Chats, we took notes. And if you look at the runtime of that episode, you know we took a lot of notes because that's a dense-ass season. But that's like a lowball difficulty. That's just like there are thoughts and themes and concepts I want to discuss. But writing about and thinking about Birds of Prey is like, oh, geez, what is there here? This show continues to be very canceled, pretty generic, and there just isn't too much meat left on the bone, which is disappointing because I still recall how much meat it started with and how much interesting stuff, how much we liked the early goings of Birds of Prey. But what about you? Did you feel the same coming back to it or no?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was interesting to go first to have a week off and then to do Trek Chats, where the way that we approach a Trek Chats episode is so different from a normal Chats episode because the amount of time in which we're discussing each episode of the television show is vastly different. We could, on Trek Chats, say, well, this episode wasn't so good. Let's talk about it for 2 minutes and then be on our way. But we can't do that here, which on the one hand, I think oftentimes forces us to have much richer, more meaningful discussions than we would have otherwise. And sometimes, like you're saying, puts us in a position where we just don't have very much new to say about the show. I think what I was finding is the goggles had been taken off a little bit, and it's like, oh yeah, I was really in this show when we were watching it, two episodes a week, and it was like my television diet was Birds of Prey. I was all about it, but being away from it, I didn't miss it, which, you know, I think tells you everything you need to know about the quality of the show, but also the kind of like cult factor of it. There's a reason that there isn't like a huge, I think, following for this particular show, and it's because it's inoffensive to watch it. Well, sometimes it is offensive, but you know what I mean. Watching it is like a fine experience. I think it's a pretty competently created show, but there just isn't a lot to it that lingers with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's especially interesting to think about in the context of this episode, which tries to trade on a few ongoing plot lines of the season and see them like interact with each other and come to fruition in a way that I didn't expect this show to do. I didn't really anticipate there being quite this much continuity because we're dealing with the fallout of Dinah's mother being killed. We're dealing with the open plot thread of Reese being related to Hawk, and we expose all of those issues and have some pretty dramatic character moments for Huntress and Reese, for Dinah confronting Hawk. But then it doesn't really feel like those moments amount to much. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a strange thing because, yeah, I don't know. It just, it's strange for that to happen in episode 9 of the show, I guess. And I think this show is like not giving me a clear sense of how many episodes they expected to get and like how they were going to build on this going forward. So to come back to this particular episode, which like really wants you to know what's been happening, but then doesn't really reward you for knowing that, mm-hmm. was a strange sensation. I don't know if you felt similarly about the like continuity stuff that this episode was doing.
I wasn't immediately aware of all of it. You're referring to what specifically?
Like Dinah's mom was killed by Hawk, Reese is related to Hawk, like
this. Oh, you're saying like the fact that we remember that from a previous episode does not feel like it was worth retaining, basically?
Yeah, because Dinah's mom being killed is like a pretty major plot development.
Yep.
And it feels like we cash it in here and then for what? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what do we really get out of that? Or, you know, it seemed like we were sitting on the revelation that Reese is related to this guy for there to be a scene where Reese is like, look, okay, he's my dad. And then Huntress is like, what the fuck? And then by the end of the episode, it's like, yeah, you're cool. Like, well, let's go back to hanging out next time. There just aren't. Well, you could have skipped this one, gone to the next episode and not noticed a difference, I guess is really what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But it's maybe that, you felt similarly differently.
I did feel that, like, yeah, it doesn't, even this episode doesn't like meaningfully pay off to something new going forward.
Right.
And they were like refused to change the status quo of this show. Dinah's out for blood in this episode. She wants to kill Hawk because he killed her mom. And we know that Reese has like mixed feelings about his dad, but it doesn't even feel like a reveal, right? Like when he tells, or when the girls find out, like, oh, that's Reese's dad is Hawk. Oh my God. It's not at all played very seriously. And I think that's right. My ultimate problem with Nature of the Beast is it brings to light that Birds of Prey is not a show that was designed to be discussed week by week the way that shows are these days.
Sure.
It's just a show where a bunch of stuff happens and sometimes it matters. Most of the time it doesn't. And it's fun to look at. It's very much chaff in that way. That's becoming more and more obvious as we get to the close of it, is like the show doesn't want to be like overanalyzed.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to overanalyze it anyways, because that's what we do here. Or we're going to attempt to, at least, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was going to go into my first big point.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that, because to a certain extent, yeah, it's a show that's like, hey, this is popcorn. We're having a good time. Harley Quinn's like beating guys up in the shower, and it's really fun. And that's true. But it's also a show that's like really trying to world build and bring characters back. And it went so far as to like bring this character of Hawk back when clearly there was some issue with the guy who was cast as Hawk before. And instead of just having a different thing happen, they say like, no, we want the same character. Like, that matters to us, that we're continuing to build on the Reese and his dad thing. So we're just going to recast it and like explain away why we did that. But the truth of the world matters enough to us that we're going to like go through those hoops. So it definitely is a show that's like meant to entertain you as the primary objective, but also thinks a lot about its own continuity and its own world, and wants you to pay attention to those things, which I think is like kind of a weird tension that's happening.
Yeah, it cares. It knows that all this stuff happened and references it, but like, how much does it matter? Because they're doing, you know, we talked about this in Trek Chats, like somebody should in theory be able to walk into any of these episodes and understand what's happening, but we also want the progression of Dinah's mom situation and Hawk and his father. Like, we want those things to advance, and it's really difficult. We are already far from the days of Harley Quinn has a baby and the girls have to raise it to not be a super, and then it dies of old age in 1 week.
I forgot about that episode. That was a great one.
Yeah, it was one of the best. So this is attempting to be like a serious story episode, and I think that's where it kind of fell flat, is it's not trying to be very silly. We have a villain that does a traditional like superhero villain or superhero show villain thing. He can phase through walls, which is kind of cool and kind of silly. He's not very identifiable. The reviews I've been reading, the back and forth discussions / reviews of Birds of Prey are always like, every villain in the show wears the same 6 black trench coats. They all just share black trench coats, and they all look like that. They're all just like white dudes. So
right.
I could not pick the villain of this episode out of a lineup for you.
No,
if you asked me to.
Definitely not. Was he what's his face's guy? Hawk's guy? No.
What do you mean by guy?
Like his guy is like his right hand man. Yeah.
I don't think
that
so.
That was a different guy.
I'm pretty sure that was a different guy.
Yeah, they all just look like that.
Exactly. It's a counter to like, okay, you don't want spandex and colorful costumes, which yes, I do. But right. You don't want spandex and colorful costumes. Okay, this is what everyone dresses like. It's real. It's gritty. It's leather.
Right. It's like, that post aughts X-Men thing.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, great. Now everybody wears leather all the time. That's really boring. And the color palette on the show, if you did one of those like palette lines where it looks like a barcode, would be like black and gray primarily.
Right.
What were some of the big takeaways for you?
I think a lot of what I was kind of perplexed but also interested by was how they handle the Reese situation here. And they try to go into some backstory around, because I initially thought Reese didn't know that his dad was a bad guy. But this episode makes it clear that he totally does, because he shows up. Basically, the setup to the episode is that you have a meeting of these like underworld dudes, and including Hawk, and they realize that neither of them contacted the other party, so they've been set up. Somebody busts out and shoots all of them, and then Huntress drops down. She's like, "Whoa, sheesh!" Brings Reese in. Reese is poking around. And when he hears that Hawk was supposed to be there, he's concerned, which Huntress notices. And then when they realize that Hawk got away, he's like, ah, phew, great. And Huntress says, that's kind of a weird way to react to this, like, you know, kingpin of the criminal underworld not being killed when you're a cop. Suspicious. Barbara Gordon is like, well, you know, I mean, maybe he wanted to bring him in himself.
Yeah. Maybe he wanted to.
Helen is like, I don't know. It seems fishier than that.
No, but, it isn't.
Right. But they confirm that Reese knows who his dad is. He goes and talks to his dad face to face. And he's like, I'm here for mom or whatever. And then they do some hoop jumping to explain, like, well, how do you have a character who's a cop in New Gotham who has like a reliable line of communication to one of the bosses of this underground syndicate or whatever it is that Hawk does, and have that cop not do anything about that? But also, it is because of his dad's status that he is a cop in the first place, kind of thing.
Yes.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of plot contrivance in this episode.
That's true.
That, you know, maybe it's a product of... I think what honestly does this episode in is that it is trying to culminate a few different plot threads, but it, because of the time that it came out on television, it has to do it in the span of a single episode. So any idea that it brings up, it has to have a resolution in this episode. And so what ends up happening is, okay, we're bringing up the Hawk stuff. We have to explain Reese's relationship. We have to give you the quick backstory. And we have to have a resolution to the conflict where at the end of the episode, Reese puts his dad in handcuffs. And if you had spread those plot moments out a little bit more, developed them over time, deepened them a little bit more, had some more time to explain, like, maybe Reese doesn't have, you know, unfettered communication with his dad. It's only when his dad reaches out to him. Or maybe he tried to bust him before, but he wasn't able to. Or if we just had more time to build more context, I think it could have felt different. But because we're trying to do the twist, do the backstory, do this story, do the resolution, do the see you next time all in the span of 40 minutes, it ends up feeling rushed. And it also ends up feeling like there's a lot of scenes where characters are kind of standing around talking plot at each other. Like that last scene where he and his dad are there and Hawk is like, hey son, look, I don't really feel like talking to the police, but like, I'll be out of your life, shake hands. just the way that it's shot and blocked feels so, I don't know. It feels like they're doing a rehearsal of the episode instead of like the actual thing.
Yeah. So I have to jump in here.
But, yeah. Sorry. There's a lot of stuff.
I was going to reference that there's this tweet that somebody sent in our Discord this past week from at Neb's Good Takes, who is a person who tweets a lot about the Arrowverse and DC and stuff. And basically they were looking to an old Reddit thread from, I believe, 5 years ago, talking about Birds of Prey on like our television. And there was this really, really long comment from user Adramalek Ashma. That's my best attempt at the pronunciation. You can find it in our Discord, or I can link it in the show notes if people want. But basically, to summarize, it sounds like this show was, in a lot of ways, like an audition for what was going to be a real show. And they just didn't get the chance to do it the like real and normal way. Like they had a lot of concepts for characters interacting with each other more meaningfully and scripts that built on each other and stuff like that. And it was a competition of like network stuff and financial stuff that led to problems such as, and this one blows my mind, the writers were never allowed to see the dailies or visit the set, so they didn't actually know what they wrote, whether it worked on screen for the actresses or not. Which is bonkers. Like, really let that sit in. You wrote something. And you could, in theory, what you do is you watch the dailies and you go, ooh, that line was a little awkward when they say it out loud. Let me, like, when they actually block it, it looks awkward. Let me fix it. And they're just like, nope, what you wrote is going to be there. And this is the biggest one that, like, kind of hampers episodes like this. There were scenes written to, like, for the characters to speak over each other in sort of a vocal soundscape, as this user describes it. So, like, people talking over each other the way that they do in real life. And none of them knew, the director didn't know that, and had to them just, they were like, okay, you guys just take turns and talk at each other. Fully explains why the show feels like quip back. Okay, quip, and then quip, and then quip, and end of scene. Where it should have sounded more conversational.
I see.
So that explains a lot of like this episode. And that was I guess just because I had that in my head reading it, like how to read it beforehand. I was like, oh yeah, that'll do it. And then the last thing, and this also comes up a lot for my notes for the second episode, they tried to save a lot of budget by filming with, like, they were initially just going to film in the city of Toronto and like make that into New Gotham. And then I guess like some bean counter was like, no, if we film on sets in like a back lot, then we can do that and it'll work just fine. We don't have to actually go somewhere, which is why we have the same alleyway in every episode. They didn't intend for it to be the same alleyway or look the same. They just didn't, they can't make new sets over and over again. So they're like, I don't know, this looks like an alley.
Yeah.
So it's getting more and more interesting. The kind of the puzzle starting to make sense as I read more about Birds of Prey's production, why you get episodes like Nature of the Beast that are just like this mix of canon and irrelevant canon and fighting and a new villain who's killed in 5 minutes and an old villain who's gotten rid of in 10-30 minutes, like, and then like you said, these are 40 minutes, like, bless us trying to watch episodes in time. It's like, oh, this is so tight. But then I watch it and I feel like I barely had an appetizer. I'm like, well, okay. I honestly felt unsatisfied by both of these episodes. So you know, that 40 to 45 minutes into 50 minutes, you feel those extra couple minutes. That's the cream right there. I'm not going to say the top note again, but that is the cream. And when you take that out, it's just like a very mechanical and rigid show.
Yeah, what you're saying is really helping me to put a finger on how I felt about this one. Because I think on paper, you say, okay, here's the dynamics, right?
Yeah.
We've developed a few characters here. We have this guy Reese, who's our link to the police department, and he's kind of like a, you know, stuffed shirt by the book kind of guy, but he's developing this romantic relationship or friendship with like some vibes with Huntress, who is very kind of, I'm a loose cannon, I do things my way, I'm gonna crack skulls and then figure things out along the way, and I'm cool. But they're working together extremely well.
Yeah.
You have Dinah, who is like a more innocent character whose mom is killed by this crime boss. And then you reveal, okay, the crime boss is the father of the cop guy. That the dynamics there, you could argue maybe like, oh, that feels a little convenient. But that choice introduces a whole bunch of cascading conflicts and tensions into the ensemble, where suddenly now the guy who seems so uptight and doing things by the book the right way, Huntress is like, what the fuck? Like, mm-hmm. who are you that this guy is your dad and you didn't tell us? Now suddenly the innocent character whose mom died, she's like even more enraged that we're so close to the killer. We've even been in league with his son, and now I'm being asked to like sit on that, not do anything about it. Like all the character stuff and the dynamics that are set up here, I think on paper seem great. Like it seems really intense, and you can imagine a lot of fascinating scenes coming out of it.
Yeah.
And then everything that you're describing makes it hit the screen like a dead fish because you've got Dinah across the room from Hawk being like, you killed my mom. And he's like, ah, look, I feel so bad for killing your mom. I'm sorry. And she's like, ah, you know, and it's just not a satisfying.
I had to kill you. Like, that's not how people talk or look.
And we're somehow in the same warehouse that we were in with the biker gang or something. Like everything feels, has this veneer of artificiality to it that, I think makes it really hard to buy into the like character dynamics they're trying to sell us on, which are meant to be very grounded and intense. And there's just a mismatch there.
Do you have any other notes about this episode while we're still here?
Well, you really don't want to talk about this one, huh?
No.
Get out of Nature of the Beast. There was a rough Michael Jackson joke right at the top. That was my second note after I wrote God Bless 40-minute episodes.
What was the line? What was the Michael Jackson joke?
When they were talking about how Hawk had changed his appearance, Huntress said that he pulled a Michael Jackson.
Woof. Yeah. Woof, 2002.
Yeah, real rough. Not good. I had to write that down. Huh?
When was that stuff happening? When was Michael Jackson's surgery? Okay, well,
I mean, by 2002.
Yeah, right. Several times. Okay. Sheesh.
I was really hoping that the person who arranged the hit on all of these guys was going to be Harley Quinn, and Harley Quinn was going to be making big plays. But we didn't see her in either one of these episodes, which feels, I don't know. I wish she was in them, I guess. Let's see what else. It also did feel a little silly that this plot in some scenes got reduced to Dinah being like, well, your boyfriend, and Huntress being like, he's not my boyfriend. The fact that line was uttered felt pretty silly. And then for Reese on the other end to say, she's not my girlfriend. It's like, what are we doing here?
Great, great school.
That scene, what do you think of that scene where Dinah telekinetically throws a knife, at Huntress?
So my first note about that was like, hold on, where's my note? Oh, that the actress who plays Dinah does not have the ability to really look that angry. Like, yeah. I don't think she does. I think it's just like there's something stiff about her where she can be really friendly and cute. This is another thing, by the way, that Reddit third mentioned, which is that the show was going to try to write arcs for everyone. And instead, they were only barely able to squeeze out a Dinah arc and nothing else. Like, everyone else is just fully formed. And that they were going to film way more in the school, which is why they had a school set and only used it like twice. Yes, I think she, in that scene, like, getting mad at Huntress is like, I'm furrowing my eyebrows, I'm really annoyed at you, and I was like, you're not intense, Dinah, at all. And then she starts levitating the knife, and I was like, Jesus Christ, relax. The first time I felt like her powers could do something that could hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I don't know, there's something about the way that it was directed that wasn't quite right, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
I did think the action was decent, and the effect of the guy fusing with the door was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was fun. He like into the lead door. That's kind of a sound effect. Yeah. Clever way to do it. I love that whole scene. I think that's my favorite seen in both of these episodes, maybe.
Yeah.
Was like Dinah being guided by Barbara, like, you're gonna go left, now go to the hospital, go down here. She's like, what are we doing? And it's like, nothing. You took care of your job. You lured him into the right room. And then Huntress, he turns around right. And she's like, now it's our turn. She kicks the shit out of him. They have a cool fight. And then she like squishes his face in that door. And it's great.
Yeah.
The show can do action scenes when it wants to. That's the secret to a good Birds of Prey.
Right. Right.
I also had... Nope. That's the only note I had. But I wrote him squishing through the door unsuccessfully and getting stuck in it. Now that's what I call music, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
My notes are funnier than Birds of Prey.
That feels right.
But, last thing. When the gangsters are actually fighting at the beginning of the episode, like, we're introduced to the villain and stuff. One of them yells at the other one, that's bull! And I was like, it's when your parents don't let you say a bad word. Like, you couldn't just, you needed one more syllable and you would have gotten there, pal.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Same.
Sick. Amazing. Incredible. Let's take a brief musical break. Let's refresh our batteries, and we'll be back to discuss Gladiatrix. Hey everyone, welcome back to Chats. I'm still on, and that's Dinah Lance. I mean, Magellan. I mean, hi.
Hey.
All right. I just wanted to bass boost your background noises there for everyone to hear the fun little humming that just rang through my ears. We're back, guys. We're talking about Gladiatrix. This is episode 10 of Birds of Prey 2002. It was written by David H. Goodman. It was directed by David Carson. That's right, folks. That's a double David. And aired in the new year, only 20 years ago, on January 8th, 2003. Magellan, this is not a summary of the episode, but please tell me what IMDb says this episode is about.
In this episode, Fight Club for Women.
Oh. It's like a request.
That's a terrible way to describe this episode.
It's not even accurate.
That is not what this is.
Nothing about that is accurate. Here's my summary of the episode, improvised from my memory of watching it earlier today.
Okay.
What's her name? Helena is investigating a woman who is captured by this other dude who is missing an eye. She finds out in the investigation she gets trapped in a jail cell and is forced to participate with that woman in Gladiatrix, which is an underground fighting arena that takes place in old Gotham City, which in Barbara's research we learn is the ruins of Gotham before they rebuilt over it after a bunch of earthquakes. In Gladiatrix, they drug a bunch of women to make them aggressive and want to fight each other, and rich, shitty men watch them fight. And I think it's to the death. And of course, we don't have enough emotional stakes. So Dinah, feeling left out of the Birds of Prey action, says, I want to help out Helena. I don't want her to be a lone wolf like every single episode of the show. I'm going to help her out. Uh-oh. We accidentally get wrapped up in this together, and they end up forcing them to fight each other, but they fight their way out, and they take care of the Gladiatrix arena once and for all. Gladiatrix. Questions, thoughts, concerns? Hot takes?
Was that Two-Face?
I feel like it was based on Two-Face. But he just had a weird eye. He didn't have a weird face.
Yeah, he was burned or something.
Maybe they talked about it. I don't usually pay attention to one-off villains like this.
Yeah, I guess that's also not how Two-Face is done.
Yeah.
Because that's more of like a Dark Knight movies way.
Well, I guess it depends on the comic. But yeah, generally that's a movies thing.
It just was weird to have a guy who was like so vaguely reminiscent of Two-Face in a Gotham show and not say that that's who that is. Because he also had like a suit. He was like a fancy guy.
Yeah.
So I didn't really get it. Anyway, This one was fine. Okay. I don't know. Did you like it?
I thought the concept was definitely more interesting than the last one.
Yeah, for sure.
We're back to like a weird thing is happening and we're doing weird things to figure it out and fix it.
Yeah.
That's great. Simple, easy breezy, beautiful cover girl. But I just feel like it isn't even Fight Club for Women because we don't spend any time in like the arenas, like talking about the mechanics of the fights. There's no cool announcer. Like, this is a waste of a like underground arena plot line. A lot of games, and especially video games, but also other shows and even films will do, like, everybody, they get sucked into an arena and they have to fight their way out and then they like break out in the last fight. That's like a tried and true concept.
I feel like superhero properties love to do this thing. Like, there's a series of Justice League, the animated series episodes, where like Superman is taken to an arena world. I think it's called Arena World or something like that.
Dragon Ball does like it. That. Well, obviously Dragon Ball does it. That's like the premise. But yeah, I think actually in the reviews I was reading of Birds of Prey of this episode, they talked about the Justice League episode. So even in DC, it's been done. The MCU does it. It's in Shang-Chi. It's in, I think, Thor 3. I haven't seen Thor 3, but I think it's in there.
Yeah, isn't that the thing of that one?
He sees the Hulk.
Yeah. And I think it's a concept that works fine. Star Wars does it. Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, true.
I think it works perfectly fine because what's appealing about this sort of like gladiator plot, arena fight plot, is you get to see a character who, like, you end up in these like super stories getting main characters who have these otherworldly powers, but also by virtue of their morals or position in society or whatever, they have to restrain their use of their powers. And so in a plot like this, you get to see them have to use their powers or introduce other characters who have powers who can beat up on them. And, you know, that's kind of interesting and fun, I suppose. And I think especially in a show like this, where in the last episode, there was a lot of hand-wringing around, like, not killing people. You know, that was like an early thing. Huntress sees all these bad guys in one place and she's like, I wish I could kill them. And then they all get killed. And then we spend all this time not killing Reese's dad. So in this one, on, you know, the promise of it is like, yeah, we get to do fights and stuff. But I got to be honest, I think it would have been a lot more fun if it was Fight Club for Women. If it was like an underground fighting society for female metahumans who just want to use their powers. They don't want to be restrained by like not hurting civilians. They just want to fight. That would be awesome. That would have been a great plot. And then Dinah and Huntress get to go beat each other up in Fight Club for Women because they have this, you know, rivalry, I guess. But instead it's like a skeevy guy who wants to like have sex with everybody, and he's like an incel guy thing. And I don't know, that was, I wasn't sure about all that.
No, the vibes were fantastic. I'm just kidding. That feeling when you're at a party and someone's like saying the most controversial shit at you that you've ever heard in your life, but you don't want to be rude, so at the end of like their screed on why we should institute like a white supremacist state, you're like, for sure. And then you're like, to yourself, you're like, the fuck, what? Any whosums. Yeah, I think that there was like good moments in this, but what you're talking about gets into the ultimate failure of it, and like what this back third of Birds of Prey is like, we've run out of budget, we have no more sets, and we our scripts are all like as generic and simple as they can be to save money. We literally have, this is a great concept handled terribly.
Yeah.
Handled in a really boring way. And that's interesting to me in the exercise of 13 under 13. Like, how did this get made? And somebody aired this on television and was like, yeah, close enough. Because, you know, you can tell your friends, so I watched Birds of Prey and they did a gladiator, girl gladiator episode. Was it good? It was fine. But like, No, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. The tough thing is, again, it's an episode that I think on the page, it makes complete sense. You've got Dinah, who's coming into her powers a little bit more. She wants a greater role in the like actual crime fighting part of the thing that we do here. It was bound to happen sooner or later that Dinah and Helena would have to negotiate their shared like control of that part of the process. And we spent so much time developing Huntress as a kind of like lone wolf figure who does this stuff by herself. Up to this point, she's been able to say to Dinah, don't come with me to fight people because you don't know how to fight.
Yeah.
But recently, Dinah proved her competence in the whatever that episode was, where it's the motorcycle gang, and she came to help Huntress. She saved Huntress in that situation. So, like, okay, sure, I'll buy it that there's an episode where Dinah's feeling a little frustrated that Huntress is fighting all the guys and not letting her fight people. And so they're going to come to blows, and Dinah's going to have to save her skin again. And, like, all right, I guess it makes sense for the character plot to be like, these two girls are fighting, and for the main plot to be like, so we're going to have a story about girls who are forced to fight or whatever.
Right.
That's the part where it's like, I can see the link that you're making. It feels a little on the nose, but it's a pretty classic superhero trope of a story. So, like, I guess I'll allow it. So I don't really know what the exact breakdown is here of that concept, except for maybe for me, it's the villain who's orchestrating it is like at best not super interesting, at worst is kind of off-putting. And that same woodenness of production that we talked about in the previous episode. But conceptually, it's like, yeah, that could work. I could see that working. The ideas are there for the character beats and how they're developing and how they're interacting with each other. But yeah, this one just like doesn't quite click, which is kind of a bummer because you want to see this show click a little bit more than it does.
You know what this show needs?
What's that?
It needs to get way sillier.
Yeah, right. Right.
Way louder and goofier. And I want that villain to be a screaming madman. And I want, like, not violence, but I want to see the girls, like, actually fucking battle each other and have to use weapons. And, you know, what skills do they have when they can't use their powers? And right. I want factions within the gladiator arena. Make an arc out of this, dude. You got plenty of potential here. Like, I'm not telling you I know how to write TV, and I'm not telling you definitely I know how to write within the limitations they had on this show, but do something with it. Get a little nasty with it.
Yeah.
And bring Harley Quinn back.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that's kind of bring Harley Quinn back is yes. Can you imagine if Harley Quinn was one of the people imprisoned here in the Gladiator Arena and like this is how she and Huntress figure out who the other person is? God, that would have been awesome.
One of them's masked, and she like they like get along really well, and like camaraderie, and then they break out, and they're like, oh, big twist.
That would have been cool, but anyway, that show doesn't exist, unfortunately. Nope. The tricky spot that this show is in is from a television perspective. It's drawing influence from shows that are like corny, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer is a corny show. And then from the film superhero film perspective, it's drawing influence from like the X-Men movies that are trying so hard to not be corny, and they are so corny and not as cool as they think they are. So there's this weird desire to be like gritty and tough and real and have the villain guy be like, I'm gonna like do stuff to you and like keep you as a pet or whatever. And it's like, no, slap a big purple jacket on this guy, give him a weird fucking hat and make him go whoop-de-doop-de-doo and like stop doing some of the stuff you're doing.
And they're gonna fight the next challenge. You must answer these questions too. It's right there, guys.
Right. Have a little more fun with it in that way. And I get, you know, maybe there is a version of this episode where it's a more like textually feminist thing, and where you want to have a villain that's so vocally like the shitty male gaze, shitty patriarchal power guy. I could see a world where like you do want for Birds of Prey to be a show where those sorts of guys are the villains and you fight them. But, you know, this again feels like it's the brand of feminism that's like little frail girl punch hard, which is not really the thing. So it's kind of self-defeating in a way where
it's prosaic, dude.
Huh?
It's prosaic. Like, it just ends up being as like generic and boring and uninspiring or unpoetic, right, I guess, as possible.
Yeah.
Because of this.
Yeah. And it also, I think, does this weird thing where the villain of the episode is like, I want to watch girls fight. Do it. Fight each other. And then the episode watches two of our main girls fight. And it's like, are we critiquing the thing that the villain's doing? Or are we using this villain as a pretext to like watch these girls that are the main characters of the show fight each other?
You know what we want. Yeah.
So it does this weird thing where it's framing the episode as like fighting against him, but by virtue of the situation that he's put our characters into, we as the viewers are seeing this episode from the perspective of all the dudes in the stands outside of the fight. And so that feels weird. And so why not just do it differently, where instead it's like a fight club for girls, for women, and they're doing it on purpose. And it's cool. I don't know. So it's just weird. It's just not a great episode, but it's an interesting one to dissect, I suppose.
Of course. It's got a great title also. Gladiatrix. What's better than that?
Yeah.
I feel that the episode is anodyne.
You want to link me to the thesaurus.com page you got open?
Yeah, I do. I did have thesaurus.com open, you stinky man. Let's go down a couple of quick hits here. Popcorn notes, as they say on the Austin Danger podcast. Huntress references Lilith Fair at one point.
Okay, cool.
She's like, oh, a bunch of girls in there. It's like Lilith Fair. Do we know the like queer history of Lilith Fair? I mean, I know it's like a women in music thing, but it's also a wink, 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 women in music thing. So like, you stop feeding my theory, you guys. Just relax. She's a lesbian, guys. That's what I'm saying there. The announcer calls her the Green Scorpion of Doom. I love, like, I watch wrestling, and in wrestling, the names are supposed to make a little bit of sense. Like, if you think for 5 minutes about them, you're like, yeah, that's why that person's that. Green Scorpion of Doom is nothing. That's not, does she have a stinger? Is she green? Nothing. None of that. No. Write a better name for your guys are going to name, Helena, excuse me. There's so many freaking characters in this show. I love the lore detail. I think we both like this, that this is all taking place in old Gotham. And I wish that they went way more in depth on that.
Yeah, that was cool.
We never knew. 10 episodes into Birds of Prey, and we're just finding out that Gotham was like sunk in multiple earthquakes. What? Why?
Yeah.
What happened?
I love the detail of it's granite. There's no more granite in New Gotham. It's all in old Gotham.
Wild. Cool.
Yeah, that's cool. That's fun.
Definitely want to see way more of that in the next season of the show. That's definitely coming out. Definitely.
Yeah.
Did you notice Helena's terrible new haircut this episode?
No.
She like shortened it a little bit, but now she looks like, she looks very like a young, like a teenage boy with an awkward haircut. It's kind of rough. It doesn't look bad in every scene, but it mostly looks bad.
I noticed the thing that was different.
What's that?
In the opening Alfred narration, I might just be imagining this, but it felt like some of the lines were like a redo, a different take, because in previous episodes where he would say that Oracle was a master of the cyber realms, he said it in a way where he was kind of excited about it. Like, master of the cyber realms. But now in these episodes this week, he was like, master of the cyber realms. Like, he's a little more somber about it. So I think maybe they recut it or something. I don't know. People can tell me if I'm off base, but I thought I noticed that.
Yeah, maybe it's a new cut, new take, new something. Mm-hmm. Unclear. I didn't notice that. What else you got? Oh, I want the girl with the electric hands to join the Birds of Prey. The girl from the beginning who's like with them the whole time.
Yeah, or a girl with the fire hands from the
She was cool.
Ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Destroyer, that's her name.
Love it.
I think that's what I have.
I had two more notes. The like secret symbol that pointed them to the underground fighting ring looked like the Quake logo.
It really did. It really did.
Yeah, and I tried so hard. I wrote in my notes, Master of the Cyber Realms, more like Master of, and then I couldn't think of the name of a single stage from Quake. I tried so hard, and I came up empty.
The one I always default to is Facing Worlds, but I don't think that that's originally a Quake map. You could have said Heroes Keep. That's the one with the lava.
Okay.
Quake. The one with the space jumps is called The Longest Yard.
Okay.
If anybody wants to set up a Quake 3 Arena night in the Discord, please.
Oh my god, I would love that. Please.
Hit us up. I'll lose really badly, but I'll have fun with it.
Whoa, there's a Simpsons map?
A Marge.
Simpsons map. That's awesome.
But Marge, I want to get a quad kill. How many?
Quad damage.
Quad damage.
Oh, I love Quake. Love Quake. All I could think of was BFG. Anyway.
Big friendly Greg.
Yeah, exactly. So that looked like the Quake logo. It was so funny when Barbara gets Reese on the phone. Yeah. And she says, hey, so there's this thing going on and maybe Huntress has been captured. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. There's this weird thing. I talked to somebody who said something about like an underground fighting ring where they fought to the death and it was all women, but I don't know. That can't be real, right?
Probably not.
Nope. He didn't look very hard, I guess, because he didn't find anything about it.
Oh my god.
I thought that was such a funny interaction.
Absolutely.
Who's the guy who plays Reese? What's his name?
Shemar Moore.
I saw his face on poster for some show when I was skimming through some streaming service. I was like, whoa, Chat's alum.
Joke's on us. He's been on Criminal. He's probably from SWAT.
SWAT. Yes. That's what current. I saw. I saw SWAT.
He's a mainstay on SWAT. Great actor, but known mostly for like Law and Order and stuff.
Sheesh, this guy's 52 years old.
Yeah, he doesn't age. Spoilers. At the end of the show, him and Harley Quinn hook up and she kisses him with an anti-aging serum. That's why in real life he didn't age.
He really did not age one day.
No. Oh, anyway. God.
What?
I read what we're watching next week.
Tell me, I want to know.
Next week on Chats of Prey, we're nearly done with Birds of Prey 2002 as we discuss Reunion, Season 1, Episode 11. Huntress struggles with her secret and public identity at her high school reunion as she pursues a lusty, invisible serial killer who's also pursuing her. Just the up and down of that arc, like, oh, Huntress high school reunion? Dope.
Yeah, I was so interested and then not at all.
Lusty, invisible, creepy villain.
Yikes.
But then we're watching season 1, episode 12, Feet of Clay. Okay. F-E-A-T of Clay. After a robber, Chris Cassius, breaks into a chemical factory and drinks a mixture that gives him the power to turn people to stone, Barbara cancels her vacation with her boyfriend, Wade. Aww. Mm-hmm. Unwilling to allow Barbara to continue neglecting her personal life, Alfred the butler brings Wade to the clock tower.
Oh, Alfred, careful.
Careful, Alfred. You're going to reveal everything. Huh. So that episode is another famous one because it's the first canonical live-action appearance of Clayface.
Okay.
He's not in a lot of stuff, obviously. Not a big, popular DC villain, but he's in that one. That's a canon. Shiva and Clayface are the two canon, and Harley are the canon villains. Magellan, that's Chats of Prey. I feel like I'm echoing. Am I echoing really loud?
No.
I can't tell. Well, it must be because I'm in the pre-plug zone, and it's a really big space in here. John, can you tell people where they can find you on the podcast sphere, please, my friend? My sweet friend?
You can find me on another podcast called Super Smash Echoes that I do with my friend Justin, where we play video games related to the Super Smash Brothers franchise, Super Smash Echoes. You can also read some of my writing on my
Substack.
What's that called? Yeah, Substack. On my newsletter, my Substack, which is at notthatmagellan.substack.com.
So check yes. What are you guys covering next on Echoes?
We are Fire Emblem Awakening. Is that what it's called? The 3DS one?
Yeah. But and then the Ice Climbers episode still to be coming out, right?
Yes, that should come out very soon.
Oh!
And then Fire Emblem Awakening is after.
I'm a little randy for it.
It was a fun one. We did Ice Climbers and Journey together.
Oh my god.
So, yeah.
Say what you will about Justin. At least he has an ethos for how to run your podcast with you.
Yeah, that was Justin's idea. It was a good idea.
I love it.
What about you? What else do you do?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I am on a bunch of CNI media podcasts, including The Creature Quorum and The Garnet Wager, and occasional appearances on The Bottle Crow podcast. And the Oops More Anime, Oops All Anime. I'm on everything. You can find my voice on everything Scanline Media has done somewhere if you look hard enough. But we have really exciting plans. I visited Garnet Wager co-host Nick when I went to DC a week or so ago, and we did some wonderful in-person planning for the upcoming season. Lots of good storytelling to be had there. My bi-monthly gig is a podcast called Talkie Marketing. We have a new episode of that coming out. Has just come out before this episode. You'll hear my discussion with Tim Halley from Monk Creative. It's a marketing interview podcast I do every other month with AMA Boston, talking about marketing, creativity, and what sparks our creative minds. It's a really fun show. That's what I got, though. Magellan, can you do the plug zone for us this week, please, my friend?
Before I do the plug zone, I wanted to quickly mention that in a few episodes, so we have our next episode of Birds of Prey, and then we have one more Chats of Prey episode for the final episode of Birds of Prey, as well as the Birds of Prey movie from 2020. So that'll round this out. Then on the feed, we're going to take a 2-week break, and after that, we're going to return with a Should You Watch episode. So we were discussing prior to this recording some options. We wanted to float some options to folks now, and then give you time to recommend some things to us. Then we might put out a poll or something like that for our next Should You Watch. So we were thinking some potential options include Beef, the Netflix show that just dropped. What's that one called? The Cheryl Strayed one? Tiny Beautiful Things?
Is that Tiny right? Beautiful People. Tiny Beautiful Things. I saw a tweet that was like, hasn't this title been used 50 times in the past 5 years? So it's not just us.
And then there was also that Party Down revival season, if people are interested in that. So we kind of want to know, since Should You Watch is a little more, a little less frequent now, we want to be a little more intentional about what we're watching for it and get a sense of what people want us to talk about. There's also the second Yellow Jacket season, which won't be done by the time that comes out, but we might talk to you about it, how it's going, things like that. So let us know what's most interesting to you for that Should You Watch for May, if you have any ideas. Anyway, you can send us those ideas or thoughts in a few different places, or just give us other questions, comments, suggestions, notes that you might have. We have an email for those things, which is chatspot@gmail.com. We also have a Twitter account for now, which is we are at Chatspot on Twitter. Now, you can also get in touch with other listeners of Chats on Reddit, reddit.com/r/chatspot, or on our Discord, which is a benefit for folks who are patrons at $1 a month and up. We have a lot of fun on the Discord. We talk a lot about all the different shows that we discuss. It's very lively over there, so join us. And what else do you want to know? We have a YouTube channel, Chats, a television podcast on YouTube. You might be seeing stuff on there. You'll certainly see Should You Watch episodes on there. We post those there, things like that. Speaking of Patreon, which I just mentioned, $3 a month and up gets you access to twice monthly bonus content. $5 a month and up gets you access to all of that, all of our previous content, and being thanked here at the end of every episode. Our $5 a month patrons include Stefan, Six, Pat, and Nick of the Brothers at Infinite War, Michael, May Louise, Marcus, my mom, Lee, Kat, Justin, Jen, and Arthur. Thank you, folks, for being $5 patrons. We appreciate it. We have a website at chatspot.com. You can rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can thank at Camillustrator for our podcast art and follow her on various social platforms. And you can also spend some time this week with our chatsums, which are recommendations of various types that we have for you on a weekly basis. Little snackums, things to munch on between now and next time. So, Alan, what is your chatsum for the folks?
Yeah, I have a fun chatsum this week. So this past Saturday, I, with a friend of mine, went into downtown Boston, or into Cambridge, I guess, to watch a short selection of short films. The group was part of Boston's LGBTQ film festival called Wicked Queer. The film collection was called Stories from Middle East and North Africa. And it was a series of, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 short films, primarily in Arabic. Oh, I think one of them was in Turkish, and one's in Egyptian Arabic, that are all about different queer experiences in across the Middle East and North Africa. And I want to shout out all of those movies, but I also want to shout out the Brattle Theater in Boston, which is an independent theater here that needs support and has been going strong for years and years. But I in general, if you don't live in Boston and you can't check out the Brattle, then go visit your local independent theater, see what weird stuff they're showing, because I think you're going to get a lot out of it. It was a great theater experience. They're very big on like no lights in the theater besides the movie, no talking. And then at the end, we got to like vote for what was our favorite short film. And we got to like stand outside and discuss it with a bunch of people. So love the experience. Shout outs to the Brattle in Boston. And shout outs to the following films. If you can find these online, Black Dog, which is the Turkish one. The Window, which is a beautiful Lebanese love story. Adjustment, which is a sort of surreal story about transphobia and a young Iranian child's life. One Like Him, which is about a Jordanian man who's telling his first love that he's getting married and kind of playing with the different ways to explain that to someone. Shems, which is a Egyptian film about a Belgian woman who has been dating this like Egyptian woman who was kidnapped or brought to a psychological center because they found out that she was gay, and the sort of adventures around that. And finally, Warsha, which is a beautiful, beautiful, almost wordless film about a Syrian migrant worker working in Beirut who manages one of the most dangerous cranes in the world. So he does a lot of like climbing up really high buildings to jump on this crane and manage it. And it's just really beautiful. And it kind of made me choke up a little bit. So yeah, that's what I got. What about you, Michelle?
My chatsum is something that I would actually imagine, if you're a listener to our show, you've probably come across this YouTube channel before, but I've been digging deep into the retrospectives and reviews over on Rowan J. Coleman's YouTube channel. He's got a lot of great science fiction, superhero, movie, TV stuff. A great series on Star Trek. Don't worry, I'm not spoiling anything for myself. Well, except for the plots of every TNG movie, actually. So I am spoiling that. But nothing from DS9 or Voyager, nothing from later in TNG. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. So that's fun. So Rowan J. Coleman has content that I think if you like the core Chats brand, you'll probably enjoy what he's got over there.
Amazing. I'm so excited. Rowan. Lewis. That's what we got, folks, tonight. I'm going to go do funny Family Guy impressions and make Magellan laugh before we both fall asleep. I want to say thank you to Magellan, Magellan P, for being the Who's the villain? Who's the villain, Magellan?
In what?
In life.
I don't know. Ourselves, I guess.
Okay. Thank you for being the Mr. Hawk to my young hawk, because you are the villain inside of my family. Wait. And thank you guys very much for listening to Chats of Prey. Squawk! Bye-bye. I love you. Smoochie. Mwah.
Bye.